Keep it real on CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
Sanbonani, South Africa, and to our listeners from the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, bonjour. How's the music, Lionel?
Oh, the music is very, very entertaining. Dumela mba la lady ba Cliff Central. Today we've got people from DRC. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Comment ça va?
Ça va bien, merci.
Oh, merci. Welcome to Cliff Central.
Yes,
thank you.
Great. I'm Gary Hertzberg, and with me today is Lionel Makoko Tlela. That was Lionel's voice, and welcome again, Lionel.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you very much, and hello to you, Gary.
And also in studio with us is Duncan Mabaso. Welcome, Duncan.
Hello, Gary, and beautiful people in the studio today.
They really are beautiful. Look at them. Okay, I'm going to introduce everyone in a moment. Today, the studio is really filled with prominent members of the Congolese community, including, and this is a real scoop for us, the very beautiful Miss Congo South Africa. And she is just, you know, she's radiant, she's exquisite. It's a great honor to have you here. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Good.
Thanks for the invite as well.
Your name is Maria, if you wouldn't mind pronouncing your surname.
Yes, my name is Maria Karavataki, and I'm the Miss Congo SA 2015.
Oh my God, please repeat that, this surname?
Karavataki.
Oh, okay.
That's why I didn't want to. That's why I left it to her.
No, thank you very much for coming through.
Thank you.
Yeah, as we all know, the Congolese civil wars, which began about, I think, 20 years ago, has devastated the Congo, that area, the DRC, and it's resulted, and this is very tragic, in the death of, I think, close to 5.5 million people, half of which are children.
And yeah. This is just very difficult to really comprehend, because yesterday I was actually reading on DRC and the way we're fighting in the capital city. Mm-hmm. And people were fleeing their homes, trying to really run away from the militants that were actually fighting. So it's just very, I can't really find words to describe it, but it's just so sad that even today we have to go through these things over and over, where people are losing their lives because of one particular person or a political party, for that example.
Yeah. Well, we know that many of the Congolese nationals or their families are now living in South Africa. I think the figure, subject to correction, is about 150,000 Congolese people in South Africa. Welcome to all of you. I'm not one of those that's anti anyone, the more the merrier. Literally. And I think you make a great contribution to us, but we're going to discuss your contribution in more detail to our listeners. I know that many of the Congolese nationals and their families now living in South Africa have sought refuge here to start a new life from scratch. So let's welcome a few in studio who, aside from Miss Congo South Africa, we have to start with Miss Congo South Africa Chairman Jeffrey Shitundu.
Yeah, that's right. Good afternoon to you, Gary, and also good afternoon to the listeners, and thank you for having us here. The pronunciation is Shitundu. So you were almost there.
Okay. You also have a beautiful wife who's a South African. Yes.
That's right.
And she's in studio today. She's not going to be talking unless she wants to. She is the official photographer.
Yes, she is. My beautiful wife, that's Palesa right there. And yeah. She's also our photographer for the day.
Good. Joining us as well is a man known as Alexis Ngoy. Also originally from the DRC. Welcome to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon to the listeners. And Gary, thank you for inviting us to share some of good conversation that we're going to have today.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's just talk about something a little more serious right now. Last month, I picked up in the newspapers that ex-vice president of the DRC, Jean-Pierre Bembe, was found guilty of war crimes by the International Criminal Court. Now, we are awaiting his sentence. Also, 2 years ago, another Congolese militia leader was given a 12-year jail sentence for war crimes. And in 2011, Congolese warlord Thomas Lubunga was given a 14-year jail sentence, also for war crimes. So clearly the International Criminal Court has sharp teeth and is punishing these cruel despots who are raping and pillaging beautiful countries such as the DRC. What we're going to do today is we're going to unpack the role of the International Criminal Court as well and South Africa's position in light of the al-Bashir debacle last year. You remember that?
No, I do. And it was actually quite interesting how the ruling came about in terms of the Supreme Court actually having to send a ruling to the political party that is reigning in our country in terms of the action that they actually took place, they followed in that and in that regard. But what is quite interesting is just the war crime court that you are referring to. It just seems to be the sentencing just seems to be so light in relation to the amount of people who lost their lives, who lost their homes, who lost their families as a result of their decisions. I really just think, to a degree, the sentencing is not really fair.
You may have a good point there. 5.5 million dead, and some of these despots get 12 years or 14 years. It's not enough, but at least they got something, which they wouldn't have got but for the International Criminal Court. Now, who's going to help us explain what the International Criminal Court is all about is two law, what we call you, candidate attorneys from the Center for Applied Legal Studies at WITS. And their names are Kuresha Pillay and Baone Twala. Have I got that right, ladies?
It's Kuresha Patel and Baone Twala. Yes.
Okay, good. Welcome to you. You're going to do a lot of explaining to us about the International Criminal Court, how it works, etc. We look forward to that insert a little later. If you'd like to join us in today's discussion, our number 0861-555189. You can Skype us on cliffcentral.com. You can tweet us at Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W, or on the Cliff Central app. You can tweet us. If you have Cliff Central on your app, just tweet right through, and and it reaches us here.
That's right. No.
Great.
Yeah. And we welcome any contribution from our listeners.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's firstly deal with Alex. Alex Ngoy, we know that you arrived as a person from the DRC. How many years ago did you arrive in South Africa?
I arrived in South Africa since 2003.
Yeah. You have a degree in hospital management from the DRC.
Correct.
You weren't able to use this initially when you arrived, obviously. What papers did you come in on?
The time when I came in South Africa, I didn't have any legal document. I ran from DRC from the war as a refugee. Came here. I applied for asylum seeker as a refugee. Is where that I started. So I didn't have a passport before until I got the proper document currently now.
Sorry, say, how was the application process for you when you went to Marabastad to get your asylum seeking papers?
That time it wasn't so bad. It was easy. You just come and then you apply because everyone was aware of the war that was happening in the DRC. You have to go there to refugee reception, mm-hmm. and then they have to pass the interview. If really the officer determined that really you were from DRC and you were a refugee, then you will get the paper, the proper paper, what calls, what will be recognized as a refugee in South Africa. You will be issued, was issued by refugee status.
from there.
Lionel, you want to talk about Marabastar, don't you?
Certainly, because the condition of where people actually have to queue up to get their papers, it's really despicable. There are no toilets. People have to sleep in the open field. And there's a lot of mugging taking place, a lot of raping taking place. And if you really go there around about 6 o'clock and you start seeing the queue building up for the following day, it's just something else. And I think this really infringes on people's rights in terms of their dignity to actually do their application. Yeah. I don't know if then the CAs in the studio have got anything to say in relation to that.
Yes, definitely. There are a host of rights that can definitely be violated as a result of this, the rights to dignity and the rights to security as well. So I think the process there and the arbitrariness with which the Immigration Act is actually implemented can be of quite concern for immigrants.
Yeah, it's actually disgraceful, isn't it, the way people are treated in our country. We're suggesting how they are ill-treated in their own countries initially, and then they get here and it's no better to start with.
You are correct, because what is actually disheartening about this whole thing is the fact that when South Africa was actually experiencing its own difficulties politically, some of our leaders actually had to flee to other countries where they were actually getting a good reception. But today, when we have the freedom, we seem to be failing or forgetting where we came from and how they actually treated us. So right now, this is just really mind-boggling. I don't know if you need to say something.
Yeah, it's also very important to note that the Constitution affords human rights protections to all people in South Africa. So not necessarily the citizens of South Africa, but all the people that are within the borders of South Africa. So the fact that immigrants come from other countries other than South Africa, that should not impact how they are treated by the government through the human rights the Home Affairs Department.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't impact how other South Africans interact with them, because that also infringes on their
rights. I think we've learned that the Constitution is paramount in this country. We've heard it very recently. And any person on South African soil must be treated in terms of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, absolutely. Alex, you are as I said earlier, you have a degree in hospital management. What did you do initially when you arrived in this country? Were you able to use that degree, or what did you do?
Okay, thank you, Gori. The time when I came here, it wasn't easy. Life wasn't easy, really. I had my principal, if you go in other country, you may be today a prince, but being a slave for other country. Mm-hmm. For me, it was really, really tough. I started by doing anything. I was hoping to get what I went to school for, but it wasn't easy to get it that time. Then I started to to organize a street guard. I just first put my degree in somewhere while I'm processing my stuff. Then let me get crepe, whatever that comes to me, I will crepe it. So I start working first as a street guard. From street guard, I had objective. I wasn't just working until get retirement on that job. It was just the job to allow me to pay rent and to eat and then to have some transport to go to process my stuff. So I started then. I did almost 2 years. After 2 years, now I started doing, I went even to work somewhere to other retirement place where I have to shave people, old men. I have been doing any kind of job. So I tried to work for me to gain something. And then from there until all my process went through and my document from immigration or from Home Affairs, it went well until now. I'm working with a lady called Anne Levenbeck. We were working together as a wound care specialist also now.
Okay, so you're working in a hospital as a wound care specialist.
Yes.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
What I've noticed as a motorist that there are many car guards that are originally from the Congo, and that's what they seem to be doing, a lot of them. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Just to get on their feet, really.
Yes. Life is not easy for everyone, especially when you're a foreigner, because being a refugee here is different from when you are a refugee overseas. There is a certain principle that they can do. Here in South Africa, we say thank you to all authorities for receiving us and giving us opportunity to work.
Is South Africa the right country for you, Alex?
I will say yes, South Africa is a right country for me because has given me a shelter until now. From the start is a stage of life. I call it as a stage of life. It's always been like that.
Let's talk a bit about the DRC. I think we know that it's the second largest country in Africa with a population of about 18 million. Am I right about that?
Yeah, you got it.
It's bigger than the whole of Western Europe, which I found quite interesting.
No, it's very interesting. But what I also find interesting is just the way the spirit of the people in terms of really working so hard to really transform their lives. Even with their education, they can still just do anything just to uplift themselves and still stand there, find their 2 feet and just proceed going forward.
Let's talk to Jeffrey quickly before we speak to Miss Congo, South Africa. Jeff, you lived in the Congo?
Well, Gary, just to start off, I did, but my story is very different to that of Alex in the sense that I came to South Africa about 28 years ago. I was 6 years old when I moved to this country, so I've had a very different experience, but obviously with having families around, there's a lot of stuff that Alex has mentioned that I can relate to. When I came to South Africa, you know, it was still early times before the country became a democratic country, and we were faced with the challenge of being accepted here, given the previous regime, how it was. And being part of the transformation as well enabled me to obviously understand more of what the transition that had occurred in this country. And as I said, with the fact that I've got family members who eventually migrated to South Africa afterward, and having seen what they went through, enabled me or gave me the privilege to get to see how difficult life was for them, you know, in terms of settling in.
Do you think that racism is an issue for you here? You're not a South African. We know there's so much talk of xenophobia. Do you experience that?
Yes. Being a foreigner, you know, you will always experience racism or xenophobia. The thing is that what I like to reiterate is that racism or even xenophobia is something that you experience everywhere in the world. It's just the degree at which it is presented at. You know, so when my family moved here, the whole transition was a lot smoother, and we went through a phase of obviously getting the whole my parents got the work permit, and then after that they got the permanent residence, then the whole citizenship process by which we had to naturalize. So somebody like me now today has challenges to travel back to the DRC in the sense that I need to get a visa because I have a South African passport. So my story is totally different now. I have to go down to the Congolese embassy and apply for a visa in order to visit my home country.
That's interesting, yeah. Do you go back there?
I have not had the chance to visit home.
How are things right now in the DRC? You've been, obviously, you get reports.
Yeah, with my parents going in and out, it depends on which region of the DRC you're visiting. Things are a lot better. I had a cousin of mine who visited us about 3 months ago, and he's from Lubumbashi. And he's obviously working for one of the big mining companies that side. And the guys are getting pretty good salaries, you know. There's a lot of expats there, you know, who are working with them, establishing businesses there. So it's about getting opportunities, just like any other countries. You know, if you've been exposed with opportunities, you are bound to prosper in the country. It's just that with the transition right now, with the upcoming elections and with the government, obviously, as you know, I can't say the outgoing president, but the president wanting to extend his mandate, those are some of the issues that are causing a bit of instability in the capital city.
Yeah, I know that I think it's the U.S. Department of State warns their own citizens against traveling to the DRC.
Yes.
They say it's unstable and there's sporadic violence and people, armed forces in certain areas are known right now to kill, rape and pillage and all the rest. So they're saying to their people, just be careful.
Yes, it is true. It is a fact. However, it also comes down to, like I said, which part of the country you've been exposed to. A lot of those turmoils have been experienced more toward the east region of the country.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're to visit, let's say, Kinshasa or Lubumbashi, Kinshasa being the capital city, you will be amazed. You'll be surprised to see that just how peaceful life can be, you know, and how pleasant as well.
Well, it's rated one of the most beautiful countries in the world.
Absolutely.
With beautiful rainforests and savannas and jungles and...
And the natural resources. Yeah. I think that we can touch on that. I mean, it is potentially the richest country in the world in terms of natural resources. And you do know that in any country where you will find natural resources, you are bound to also find political instability because everybody wants to be able
get
to
get a part of it. Yeah,
absolutely.
For sure. Let's talk to Miss Congo, South Africa.
Hi, Garrett.
Good. You have, we said 150,000 Congolese in South Africa, so your pageant's quite a big one. How many girls competed against you?
Oh my God. Well, there were a lot of girls who went for the audition. But they only picked 16 girls to resigned. They didn't want to come for the competition. And then we left 14 of us. Then we had boot camps and a lot of activities where they had to choose 10 finalists. Oh. And the 10 finalists, I'm the winner. Thanks, God.
I think the motto, I saw something that the motto for Miss Congo South African Beauty Pageant is branded and celebrated as follows. They say, true Congolese beauty inside and outside.
Yeah.
Now we can see the outside. We just hope the beauty's inside as well. How does one determine that? I suppose your manager would know.
So what sort of activities took place at the boot camp? What were you guys doing?
Well, at the boot camps, we have people that come and share some word with us, like they teach us about what it is being the queen, what it is when you win, what you have to do after, and they also teach us how to walk, how to be a classy woman. And how to dress, and there is a lot of activities. We also have fun. We went for the bungee jumping, and
how was that?
It was exciting.
So this is like really
I love that part of adrenaline in life. Yeah.
What about competing in other pageants? Is there something from here? Do you compete against Miss Ghana and Miss South Africa and?
I beg your pardon.
Are there other pageants that she can get involved in, Jeff? Or
yes, Gary, just to reiterate a little bit, just or maybe to step back, one of the reasons, actually, or the main reason as to why we decided to give birth to Miss Congo South Africa is not just to elect a queen to represent the Congolese community in South Africa, but it's also to be able to teach South Africans and the rest of Africans living in South Africa about our culture. It's very important. And we do give a lot of emphasis on that throughout the whole journey itself. Now, on the night, like, for example, the crowning night last year, we introduced a lot of our Congolese dishes so that people could taste it. And we wanted people to dress up in the whole African attire, you know, because we're very much in touch with our roots and all of that. In terms of the contestants, this is the fifth year of Miss Congo South Africa. The pageant always happens at the end of every year, with a four-month process where we obviously scout and we take them through different types of trainings. And now the reason for that is we want to empower the Congolese women. Mm. And why? Because it goes back to the history of Congo. You know, previously, women were not being given as much opportunities as they should have, you know, and they were not heard. Now we're busy training them so that they can be able to go back and take on these top positions and be able to change the system in the country, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I read something disturbing. It says that in the DRC, violence against women seems to be perceived as normal in large sectors. And I read that the Independent reported a few years ago that more than 400,000 women were raped in the DRC each year. 400,000 were raped per year.
Yes.
This is frightening and it's sick.
Unfortunately so, but look, the underlining issue there is we need to go back to the root source and or the root cause, the perpetrator behind that. It's not just a thing that's being done by Congolese men.
Mm.
Remember that with the political instability, the wars, there's soldiers who've actually gone into the Congo and they've been assigned to ensure that there's peace. You know, they've been brought in as peacekeepers, but they're now taking advantage of the situation.
Mm.
Now, if you were to really look into the matter, into details, you realize that a lot of these incidents are being committed by not the Congolese men themselves.
But the people that are supposed to protect.
To protect, that's right.
Mm.
You know, the culture in Congo is such that we've been brought up to really respect the women. As much as it is instilled to us that the man is the head, which is something that you find in every African culture, but we've been taught to respect our women. Now, you will not easily find a Congolese man also invading you know, women's privacy without her consent. Mm. So it is really unfortunate. And I just read an article 2 days ago whereby there were a couple of military who are now being prosecuted for what they've done in the East. So at least now we can see that justice is taking its course.
Good. I think we need break right now. When we come back, we're going to bring in our two candidate attorneys who are going to talk to us about the International Criminal Court. We're also going to talk a little more to Ms. Congo South Africa. We'll be right back.
CliffCentral.com.
I patiently waited for you for 9 months. I would sit in my chair and talk about how I longed to meet you. I knew you'd be the most beautiful baby in the world. I was ready for you, but I wasn't ready for this. If you have a child in need of reconstructive surgery, Smile Foundation can help you. Visit www.smilefoundation.co.za or call us on 0861 276 453.
It's back. Are you Jersey tough? Cycle through tunnels, over floating bridges, and into colossal stormwater drains. You're a machine and nothing's going to stop you. With two separate routes, a 22K for beginners or a 54K for the tougher riders. Go where no mountain biker has gone before. On the 29th of May, ride the Hollard Juma. Brought to you by AdReach and Joburg City Parks and Zoo. Challenge accepted. Juma.co.za.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
Chaos, Québec, très très fort. Président Lévi Moniato, président Patrick Ngamara, Yves Njoli de Boumier, Bonnie de son célèbre japonais, Malou de Bosquet.
So welcome back. I'm Gary Hertzberg with Lionel Makokoklela.
Yes,
you enjoy this?
Yeah. No, I'm really, really enjoying this. And just to before we get on with the next topic, we just had a passionate and a very beautiful message from Gautile Ratlau stating that, by the way, my new love show now is Law of Life. Thank you. I'm amazed. The lightning show was interesting. I never seen or heard anything like that. Well done to Gareth and the whole idea behind it.
Well, fantastic.
Thank you
for that. Yeah, keep listening. We appreciate it. Okay, so today we have a studio filled with Congolese. Is that the right term? Do I call you Congolese? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And what we're trying to talk about today is also the International Criminal Court, because some of the despots and war criminals and people that have caused mayhem in the DRC have been sentenced, and we want to know more about this International Criminal Court that South Africa shied away from when it came to the Al Bashir incident. So in studio with us, let's talk to Qureshia Pillay and Bayone Twala. Both of you are from the Center for Applied Legal Studies at WITS.
Yes, Gary.
You work under a wonderful woman. Her name is Benita Meisfeld, am I right?
Yes, that's correct.
Is she the boss?
Yes, she's the director.
Yeah.
The Center for Applied Legal Studies is a human rights organization and a law clinic based at the University of Witwatersrand, WITS. And that's where we're doing our articles.
May I just talk about Professor Meisfeld for a second, because I have to give credit to her. She writes some wonderful articles. She did say that South Africa could have avoided the entire scandal of the Al Bashir incident by warning him that if he came, they would be forced to arrest him. And it's a very simple point. Why did they allow him to come here, and then why did they allow him to flee when there was a warrant of arrest issued by this very court, the International Criminal Court that we've been talking about?
Well, Gary, that may have been for political reasons which we don't understand, but legally South Africa was obliged to arrest Omar al-Bashir. And as the court found, they acted in contravention of the constitution in that regard. Also, in terms of international laws, the Rome Statute, which they'd signed onto, which governs the International Criminal Court, and which has also been domesticated, which means that it's been adopted into our law, and there's an actual statute, so which is a piece of legislation which exists, which basically embodies the Rome Statute into South African law.
Okay, let's talk slowly. The International Criminal Court sits where?
The South African Criminal Court sits in the Netherlands, The Hague.
Yep.
And
who funds it, and who's party to it?
So the countries, there are several countries that are party to it, including South Africa, including the Central African Republic.
The DRC?
Yeah. Is it DRC?
I'm not too sure.
We're
about
not
the
too
DRC.
Sure about the DRC.
Yeah.
But there are many African and developing countries that have signed on to the Rome Statute. Not many of the developed countries have signed on to the Rome Statute. Many of the countries that sit, the majority of the countries that sit on the Security Council, the United Nations Security Council, the United States, for example, they haven't signed on to the Rome Statute. So that means that if you haven't signed on to it, then you're not bound by it.
Okay, so there was criticism that the ICC, the International Criminal Court, focuses its attention on Africa unfairly whilst the rest of the world gets a free pass. Do you believe that?
Well, if you just have a look at the leaders, at least, that have been subject to the jurisdiction of the ICC, I mean, if you look at the investigations into Uhuru Kenyatta in the 2007 post-election violence in Kenya, the Lubaga case, as you mentioned as well, and now the Bembe case, there has definitely been a sense among African leaders that there is a specific targeting, per se, of African leaders or a focus on crimes that have been committed in Africa. And for this reason, and this is the whole debacle that sprung over 2014-2015 as to the policy of non-cooperation that was per se adopted by the African Union.
Yeah.
And that led to the resolution by the African Union that was adopted to the effect that the warrant that was issued for the arrest of al-Bashir should not actually be executed.
I don't really understand their reasoning, but there are rumbles in South Africa right now that South Africa intends pulling out of the agreement. How true is that? And why would we pull out of it? Yeah, who wants to take that one?
that's a tough one. So I haven't exactly followed up on the stage at which South Africa is right now in the negotiations, but I think there's a huge influence of both the law and politics here, whereas surely there is political pressure from African Union members, other African heads of states, to ensure the immunity of heads of states and governments to an extent and thus pull out from the jurisdiction of the ICC. But at the same time, we need to remember that South Africa has bound itself to regional, international, and constitutional law. Our constitution is explicit when it says that we are bound to international agreements, and we have willingly signed up to this. So surely we have an obligation to comply with it.
Wow. Yeah. What a mouth.
And even if South Africa decided to pull out of its agreements in terms of the Rome Statute, it would take at least a year for that to actually, for it to no longer be bound. And we have to remember that in the international sphere, especially, there are a lot of politics that influence states' compliance with the treaties that they've bound themselves to.
Oh.
Yeah.
What sort of cases do you guys deal with on a day-to-day basis, and who can actually approach you if they have a problem?
Are you talking about the center? Yeah.
The center, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. At CALS, we deal with human rights issues. We have five programs, which are basic services, business and human rights, rule of law, environmental justice, and a gender program. So with basic services, we deal with issues such as access to water, electricity, housing. Under business and human rights, we deal with instances where corporations have infringed or violated human rights, and then we assist people with those. Under rule of law, we're currently working on, I mean, the rule of law program spreads across all the programs, but we are also specifically working on protest issues, and also prison work and remand detention. And then environmental justice, we have just launched our first social and labor plan report, which is the social and labor plans are plans which are part of a prerequisite for mines to get their mining right. And so we have been doing research into how compliant mines are with that, what exactly a social labor plan is, what kind of commitments mines make in terms of those plans, and so on. And now we're going into a phase where we'll be on the ground and checking and basically researching and going into communities where mines have made those kind of plans. And then finally, our gender program, we deal with gender-related issues. And we also do this not just in terms of litigation, but also research and advocacy. Advocacy meaning that we will advocate for a particular cause which we believe in. So we'll write letters of support, for example, for judges where there are vacancies at the Constitutional Court or the Supreme Court of Appeal or other court divisions, so that we can get more women judges into the legal profession.
Quraysha, can the person off the street walk in and see you?
I mean, definitely, yes. We do represent communities. We also represent individuals when the issue at hand does fall into our ambit of work. Yeah. So we do offer pro bono legal advice.
Give us some of the simple matters that you deal with that the public really need your help on.
Sure. So we do a lot of strategic impact litigation. I mean, CALS has been extensively involved in matters such as the commercial issue, where we raised issues relating to gender, the Masia versus Director of Public Prosecutions, where we had a hand in assisting the overhauling of the archaic and rather patriarchal rape definition. And today we work extensively on inner city evictions, where a lot of that happens in Johannesburg. So ensuring that proper processes in terms of the prevention of illegal eviction.
Just explain that to us, people that are being evicted from their apartments or their flats, or is that what you're saying?
Yeah, sure. So especially in inner city housing, have a lot of private property owners that purchase the property. In some instances, perhaps the proper legal procedure for evicting the occupants has not been followed, and that means an unlawful eviction has actually occurred.
Okay, tell me, if somebody buy a property and somebody come to stay in my property without my consent and I want them to go out, so there are legal procedures that I still need to follow?
Yes. The PIE Act regulates all of this. You have it all in Section 4 of the PIE Act, and this details exactly how one should go about, evicting a person, where the city should be joined, provision for temporary alternative accommodation, completely rights-based.
How many people are working there? I mean, do you have many lawyers and candidate attorneys? Or?
We have about 7 attorneys currently and researchers, as well as an in-house counsel, and there are 4 candidate attorneys.
Okay, so you're quite a big business operation today. Yeah,
yeah, we're relatively, we are few in number, but we do a large amount of work.
Yeah, it seems to be. You're stationed at Wits University. Is that where your offices are?
Yes, we are. Wits University West Campus in the DJ Du Plessis building.
Do people have to make an appointment to come in and see you, or do they just roll in? How does it work?
So at Wits, there is a law clinic and then there's also CALS. Mm. So we don't really work a lot with walk-in cases,
okay,
but we do strategic litigation. So for walk-in matters, that would be the law clinic.
That goes to the clinic.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, where there are large communities that are being negatively impacted, mm-hmm, that's where we would step in.
Yeah. Okay, have you done – you weren't the people that brought the application in the – in the Al-Bashir matter?
No, the application was brought by the by SALC, the South African Litigation Center, who brought the formal application to ensure that the warrant was actually executed. But I think certainly CALS would have supported that motion to ensure that, of course, the rule of law does prevail over impunity.
Just one question on the issue of the International Criminal Court. Do they have the power to issue warrants of arrest, and that's how these matters are, people get arrested and brought before these courts?
Yes, sure. So how it basically works at the International Criminal Court is that a matter is referred by a state or an organization or an individual, and the prosecutor will then look into whether there is reasonable grounds for investigating into this matter, have domestic legal remedies been exhausted, and whether the ICC has jurisdiction. And if these prerequisites are met, they will then decide to investigate the matter. And from there, the pretrial chamber can issue a warrant of arrest for that particular person that has been referred.
So in the Al-Bashir matter, there was a warrant of arrest issued by the International Criminal Court that can be executed anywhere in the world. It should have been executed here. It should have been locked up and tried in The Hague at the International Criminal Court.
Well, Gary, with regards to jurisdiction, there's a bit of an issue there in that the ICC only has jurisdiction where states have bound themselves. Mm-hmm. And so the states that have bound themselves would then also be bound to assist in the arrest
yeah.
of the person whose warrant arrest has been issued. So it would have been powerful wherever the accused, or for example Omar al-Bashir, wherever he is, if he is in a state that has bound itself to the Rome Statute,
and South
then
Africa
that state
was
would be bound.
One of those.
Yes, yeah. South Africa's definitely.
What
one
about
of those.
The judges in the International Criminal Court? Who sits there? Where are they from? Do you know the answer?
Yes. Baone
Mutwala knows everything. It's, yeah.
Interesting.
We're both trying. So the judges that sit on the ICC, they are taken from all the countries that there are 18 of them, and they have a list. So they have list A and list B. So according to list A, those are the judges who have experience in criminal matters, criminal procedure. They don't necessarily have to have been judges in the countries which they come from, but they need to have relevant expertise. And then the other list is a list of people who are then have experience in issues such as human rights and international law, and then they just sort of pick people from both those lists, and those judges make up the composition of the judges. They also do come from the different countries that have signed on to the Rome Statute.
Who actually does who makes sure that the criteria is correct for the judges to be selected?
The researchers and everything, they've probably got a big team there.
Yeah, we are not sure who actually then selects them, but that is the criteria and that's how they're selected.
Oh, okay, yeah, so if then the it's not the US who decides or any particular country per se?
Okay, it's not actually a particular country who decides who sits on the bench, because as you'll see, the International Criminal Court is an independent international organization. So it is completely independent from the United Nations per se, and perhaps arguably the only link is that the United Nations Security Council is one of the bodies that can refer a state to the International Criminal Court. And I mean, that leads directly back to the hesitance and dissatisfaction of African leaders to complying with these matters of the ICC, because, you know, it is only the Global North that actually represents the United Nations Security Council at the moment and not the Global South.
Do you think the concerns of the African leaders in terms of the transparency of the court is really valid in their opinion, to say that they are being marginalized because of who they are?
In terms of the legitimacy of the concerns, I think that what we see historically, and this isn't now necessarily a legal reason, but there have been historically, the Global South is always perceived, it's easier to perceive the black man as a criminal. And unfortunately, that translates into the global or the international sphere and the way in which the international law takes place. So, for example, the United Nations Security Council, they have the majority of those states have not signed on to the Rome Statute, but they have the power to refer a matter to the ICC, whereas a lot of countries in the Global South have actually signed on to the Rome Statute, and so that they've made themselves bound to the Rome Statute. And it's a bit unfair when you look at it, because the Global South is then trying to comply or to work with an international treaty which has been put on the table, but the Global North is not coming to the party. And also then the ICC then operates and sort of comes after countries in the Global South. There have been arguments that that's also because a majority of those, a majority of the crimes are perpetrated in the Global South, by leaders in the Global South. But there are also crimes that are perpetrated in the Global North by leaders of the Global North, but we don't see the ICC doing anything about that.
That's the voice of Bayone Twala. Let's take a question from a listener. Please ask these ladies what it's going to take to arrest the Guptas.
But what have they done?
I think we'll pass on that one.
Well, I mean, just to hint on the jurisdiction of the court as to the crimes that it can prosecute, there's a very specific number and types of crimes that the ICC can prosecute, and it has to be of a specific threshold, namely genocide, war crimes, or crimes against humanity.
Yeah.
And again, you can only reach the ICC once you have exhausted domestic legal procedures. So, I mean, first, you'd have to explore the High Court, the Supreme Court of Appeals, the Constitutional Court, and other fora before you can even think of going to the ICC.
Yeah, stealing money from your country is not one of those that enables the ICC to become involved. Yeah,
yeah.
You agree with me. Okay, let's talk to Ms. Congo, South Africa. Your reign extends until when?
This year in December, because we elect the next Miss Congo. I think the first week of December.
You know, your picture is going to be tweeted out. All the lasses out there will want to know what color lipstick you're wearing.
It's a Rubio MAC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's you MAC. Know, but okay. Yeah, it's yeah. MAC. It's Rubio, called Rubio, the red Rubio.
What do you think of it, candidate attorneys? It's beautiful.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
How do you keep busy this year? What are you up to?
I have a year plan that I've discussed with the board of Miss Congo SA. The plan is that each month I have at least to do one charity work, and except the charity work, I attend events, and most of the events are more related to the Congolese society.
Yeah.
And Geoffrey here has also one event each month. It's about having African food, where we invite all the people to come and
I'd
taste
like to be invited
African
to that
foods.
One. I'd really like to taste your...
It's a nice initiative because we get to call every people from the community, Congolese, South African, Nigerian, everyone, they come and they test different foods.
I actually wanted to ask someone that question. There are many communities from up north, the Nigerians, Ghanaians, and so on. Do you people live separately? Do you live together? Are you close? Are you just neighbors?
When it comes to Africans, we're very much united, Gary. You know, if you were to go down to Yeovil, Hillbrow, Berea, you'll see that Ghanaians, Nigerians, South Africans, Zimbabweans, we all live in unity, you know.
Mm.
And I think with the challenges that Africans have been faced with in South Africa has brought us very close, you know, to each other, to protect each other and to also empower each other with our different initiatives. Mm-hmm. As Maria stated that with the one initiative that I've got going, which is it's called Afroadrenaline. It's an African get together. The adrenaline part is because it's at a bungee jumping spot in four ways.
Yeah, so lovely.
You know, we'll invite you guys so you can come and try out. What we do there is
talk to us quickly about the food. When you talk of Congolese food, what are you talking about?
Okay, do you want me to name the food?
No, we'll just explain what's the main ingredient.
Main, we're very strong with our fish and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's one that's called pondu. It's a vegetable. Every Congolese know pondu. You know, and we love kwanga. Kwanga, it's made of cassava. It's very nice. It's a bit, it's got that elastic
feel to it. You get it here in South Africa.
Yes, you get it at the markets, you know. Yeah. Okay. Then we've got different fish, you know, like tilapia is one of our more popular fishes, you know. Mm. So, and we also have makemba, you know, makemba, it's the plantain. It looks like a banana, but it's really huge. Mm. I tell you, if you were to try that out, you wouldn't want to switch again.
Any Congolese restaurants that you can suggest to us in Johannesburg?
Well, there used to be one, but unfortunately they closed. Kin Malebo, it was based in Yeovil. So right now I can only recommend that you come and visit, you know, my event.
Well, they're all the listeners out there, so they want to know where they can go to.
Well, at this point in time, like I said, I'm not marketing my business, but I'll advise that they should come down to Four Ways. The venue, it's called Cafe Adrenaline. It happens on the last Sunday of every month from 1 o'clock till midnight. What we do, we've got two segments from 1 till 5. It's your lunch where families can come and just enjoy the meal, the sightseeing, the view, and get to know people, networking. And then from 6 o'clock till midnight, it's all about dancing to African music.
Sounds fantastic. Cafe Adrenaline, is it, if I Google it, will I pick it up?
You will pick it up, yes.
Excellent. And will Miss Congo South Africa be there?
She's always taking photos.
Okay, so anyone, you've got to go down, you've got to go there, and you just to see Miss Congo South Africa, if nothing else, and to try your food.
Absolutely. Okay. And to network
the food
as well.
Very nice.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Lionel, you wanted this?
I was just saying, I'm really hungry just listening to that. Sorry. Because I've actually tried some of the food at Maboneng.
Yes.
They also have like a market where you try different African dishes, and it's very interesting. It's very nice. It's beautiful.
Lionel, Duncan, what about you?
Absolutely. I second what Lionel just said. We're all just hungry. Can't wait to get out of here and get some Congolese food and women, Gary.
Yes, you're right. What about you, Alex? You'll come down to Four Ways. Have you been down there?
Really?
Cafe Adrenaline. You must get all your friends there. One question to you, Alex. Are there more Congolese in the Cape or in Gauteng?
I would say in Gauteng.
Yeah.
There are many Congolese based here.
Yeah.
It started from the student that comes here sometimes for the university. Mm. Yeah, most of them comes here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And when they go home, they share their experiences and people want to come and explore it.
Yeah.
But so far, you love the experience, I must say.
Yes, I've been here for 4 years now.
Wow.
Yes, I'm studying at the University of Johannesburg.
Oh, what are you studying?
I'm doing civil engineering.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
It's not just a pretty face.
Not only that. So how are you finding the education standard in South Africa compared to home?
I came here and I started university only here, and the studies are quite tough. I have friends that does the college, mm-hmm. and university keeps you more busy and makes you work more than college. Oh. Yeah, I love it because I learn a lot since I'm here and I'm almost done. So yeah.
No. Best of luck with
the studies.
Gary, I just have a question or comment for the gentleman from Congo. You find that you find a lot of these Nigerian people, Congolese, they all come to South Africa and they open markets and they do their own businesses, but you'll never find South African men generally just going across Pan-Africa just to establish their own market and stuff. Would you find a lot of South Africans maybe at the CBDs in the Congo just trying to make a living like the Congolese people do here in South Africa?
You know, I'm actually very glad that you've asked that question.
Yeah, me too.
It's a very valid question. The thing is, when it comes to South African going across to the DRC or even Nigeria, there seem to be big opportunities for them. They strategize the reason for going there. And why am I saying this? Is because if you're to look at SAA, for example, they've got about 2 flights into the Congo on a daily basis. And the majority of the people on those flights are South Africans going on business trips down to the copper belt, mm-hmm. because of the opportunities of getting copper and diamond and all of that. So they benefit a lot. So the move there is very strategic, as opposed to a Congolese or an African who comes down here whose opportunities are very limited. So now they have to obviously opt for other opportunities, which is being in the market and selling and making something of themselves.
Yeah, thank you for that, Miss Congo, South Africa. You can live in many countries. You speak French fluently and English. Yeah.
And Swahili.
And Swahili.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say a few words, thanks, in Swahili.
Asante sana.
There we go. Many thanks to all of you. You've slept far and wide to be here today. Alex Ngoy, good luck to you. You're now in the business that you were trained to be in hospital management, or you're now dealing in the wound treatment center.
Right now, I'm dealing in a wound care center. So the management, yes, it helped me. I'm happy that I've done management. With what I'm doing, it keeps me also going very well with in terms of business, running business and running the practice. For me, I would say it was really a good thing to do that.
Yeah, I hope this message gets out to the Congolese in South Africa that they're very welcome.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, you agree with me, Lionel? As far as we're concerned.
No, all the time. I mean, as the gentleman has mentioned previously, Africans have always been a we culture. It has never been about I or you. It has always been we. So that's...
Are the Congolese, quickly, in 30 seconds, are you peace-loving, gentle souls, or are you a bit aggressive?
Peace-loving, gentle souls, the current Chen champions. So, yeah. Right.
You had to wrap that one in.
Okay, we're all going to come down, including Duncan Mabaso and Lionel. We're all going to come down to Cafe Adrenaline in Four Ways. Exactly where in relation to Monty is it? Near there?
It's just behind the Monty on Witkoppen Road. You will not miss the bungee jump. There's a 50-meter height bungee that looks like a crane.
Okay.
So follow that direction. Drive all the way into that venue. And you will see us there. You know, you will not miss it. But come along and let the listeners as well pop in and try some of our dishes.
Good, we will. And to our candidate attorneys from Center for
Applied Legal Studies.
Yeah, at Wits University. Many thanks. Thank you to Benita Meisfeld for allowing you to be here. And to all of you, many thanks. Lionel, you enjoyed this one.
I really did enjoy it. And thank you to the CAs, because they're very knowledgeable. They know what they're talking about. And I'm very impressed that we have such a bright future going forward as South Africans in our legal field.
Cool. We are contactable on law@cliffcentral.com. My Twitter handle, as I said earlier, at Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W. Also to Brigitte Meyer. Many thanks for her assistance on the show. Before I go, just a little quote. It says, "A good constitution is infinitely better than the best despot." And on that note, remember that a good constitution is infinitely better than the best despot. You'll know what I'm talking about. On that note, thanks for listening. And until Tuesday, next Tuesday at 12 noon, I'm Gary Hertzberg.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on cliffcentral.com.